Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, June 30th, 2025. From the front page, State Government, are we headed for a breakup? Vote to secede. In Illinois, 33 counties have had successful, though non-binding, referendums seeking secession. They can't join Indiana without the approval of each state's legislature and of Congress. Then lawmakers in both Springfield and Washington, D.C., along with Illinois' governor and the president's, to sign off. Currently, the counties that have voted in favor of secession are Iroquois, Hancock, Brown, Greene, Calhoun, Jersey, Madison, Perry, Massac, Johnson, Pope, Hardin, White, Jefferson, Clinton, Madison, Bound, Christian, Moultrie, Shelby, Fayette, Effingham, Clay, Wayne, White, Edwards, Wabash, Lawrence, Richland, Jasper, Crawford, Clark, Edgar, Moultrie, Christian, and Shelby. Despite moves in Illinois and Indiana, the Prairie State borders are unlikely to change, by Dan Petrella. Don't hold your breath, Hoosiers. The nearly three dozen Illinois counties where a majority of voters in recent years have expressed their desire to leave the land of Lincoln won't be joining their neighbor to the east anytime soon, or probably ever, regardless of any recommendation from a bi-state commission Illinois Governor Mike Braun signed off last month to study the issue. While the measure creating the commission sailed through the Republican-dominated Indiana State House on its way to the GOP governor's desk, a companion proposal from one of Illinois' most conservative state lawmakers went nowhere in the Democratic-controlled General Assembly before it adjourned its spring session. The disparate responses in Indianapolis and Springfield to the proposed creation of an Indiana-Illinois Boundary Adjustment Commission, described by supporters as a conversation starter, but decried by critics as a pointless political stunt, are emblematic of the yawning political divide between the states despite their deep geographic and economic ties. Here's a look at how we got here and what comes next. Constitutional requirement. When it comes to changing existing state boundaries, the U.S. Constitution is fairly clear. Article 4, Section 3 reads, "No new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states, or parts of states, without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned as well as the Congress." In plain English, that means that the 33 Illinois counties that have had successful, though not non-binding referendums, seeking secession can't join Indiana without the approval of each state's legislature and of Congress. And if they want to form their own new state, the counties still would need lawmakers in both Springfield and Washington, D.C., along with Illinois' governor and the president, to sign off. Such changes aren't entirely unprecedented. Kentucky, for example, joined the Union in 1792 after its breakaway from Virginia was approved in the state legislature and Congress. Similarly, Massachusetts lawmakers gave their approval for Maine to become its own state, a move that Congress formalized in 1820 as part of the Missouri Compromise, which also admitted Illinois' southwestern neighbor as a slave state. One state, however, did manage to carve itself out of an existing state without strictly adhering to the process laid out in the Constitution, West Virginia. But that move came amid the Civil War, after Virginia seceded from the Union and its capital became the seat of the Confederacy. President Abraham Lincoln signed a measure creating the state of West Virginia in 1863. After Virginia was readmitted to the Union, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld West Virginia's statehood. Secessionist sentiments. Regional animosities have existed in Illinois since before it was admitted to the Union in 1818 as the 21st state, and only grew stronger with Chicago's rise as an economic power in the late 19th and early 20th century, according to a 2022 report from the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. After the state narrowly voted in 1860 to send Lincoln from Springfield to the White House, Confederate sympathies lingered in some areas. Union troops were stationed in the southern Illinois town of Olney to enforce the draft, and a deadly clash between Union soldiers and pro-slavery Copperheads broke out in Charleston, now home to Eastern Illinois University, in 1864. Over the 160 years since the Civil War ended, the urge to separate has bubbled up from time to time. The Chicago City Council in 1925 passed a resolution to look into secession over concerns about the city's representation in Springfield. Residents of western Illinois in the 1960s and 70s created the tongue-in-cheek Republic of Forgottonia. And the state Senate in 1981 approved a Democratic legislature's facetious resolution urging Congress to make Chicago and the rest of Cook County New Illinois, the 51st state. In the Donald Trump era, as Democrats have firmly consolidated their control of Illinois government, some on the political right, largely downstaters, have picked up the New Illinois mantle, pushing unsuccessful state legislation and successful but legally weightless countywide resolutions seeking to cleave the state in two. Most recently, in November, voters in seven downstate counties, Iroquois on the Indiana border, and Calhoun, Clinton, Greene, Jersey, Madison, and Perry near the Missouri state line, approved ballot measures calling for a divorce from Chicago and Cook County. Indiana's invitation. The recent rumblings from downstate have caught the attention of lawmakers across the border in Indiana, where dominant Republicans are eager to position their state as a low-tax, low-regulation alternative to deep blue Illinois. In the only bill he introduced during the spring session, Indiana House Speaker Todd Houston called for the creation of a bi-state commission to discuss and recommend whether it is advisable to adjust the boundaries between the two states. These people in downstate Illinois literally went and voted. They have spoken, Houston told the Post-Tribune in January. Whether Indiana is the right solution or not, they've expressed their displeasure. We're just saying, if you'd have expressed your displeasure, we'd love to have you. Originally calling for equal representation from each state, the measure was modified as it became clear Illinois Democrats weren't having it. The final version Braun signed into law, opposed by Democrats and a few Republicans in his state, gives Indiana a one-seat majority on the panel, allowing it to meet without any input from Illinois. Under the Indiana law, Braun must appoint 6 members to the commission, notifying Illinois J.B. Pritzker of his selections, and schedule its first meeting by September 1st. Illinois' response. When the Indiana proposal made the headlines early this year, it quickly became clear, if there was ever any doubt, that Illinois Democrats had no interest in playing along. It's a stunt. It's not going to happen, Pritzker said at an unrelated news conference in January. But I'll just say that Illinois is a low-wage state that doesn't protect workers, a state that does not provide health care for people in need. And so I don't think it's very attractive for anybody in Illinois. Even those pushing hardest for an Illinois breakup don't appear overly eager to be subsumed into Indiana. Our goal is the constitutional formation of a new state, separate from Illinois, G.H. Merritt, who leads the group New Illinois, told Indiana lawmakers at a hearing in February. Nevertheless, in the Illinois House, Republican Representative Brad Halbook of Shelbyville, a member of the ultra-conservative state Freedom Cause, who in the past has filed resolutions calling for Chicago to become its own state, in January filed a proposal for Illinois to join Indiana in creating the Boundary Commission. But Halbrecht's proposal was never even given a hearing or assigned to a committee this spring. At a statehouse news conference during the closing days of the legislative session in late May, Halbrook and some of his Freedom Caucus colleagues bristled when asked how they hoped to move the conversation forward in Illinois when Democratic leaders won't let the proposal see the light of day. The real question, Representative Blaine Wilhauer of Beecher City said, is why the counties that have voted in favor of secession want out of Illinois so bad. That's the question you need to be asking, he said, but nobody asks it. They want out of Illinois because they're not respected by their government. Their government continues to push policies that drives away every one of their opportunities. Tacitly acknowledging the futility of the effort, Halbrook said, we don't need a new state. We need a governor, and that's the bottom line. Illinoisans will have a chance to elect a new governor next year. Pritzker, who has won 2 terms by double-digit margins, announced Wednesday that he will seek a 3rd term. From page 3, local and national news, Moultrie County Board Member Faces Charges, by Scott Perry. Sullivan. A Moultrie County board member has been charged with offenses, including possession of child pornography. According to a news release from Moultrie County State's Attorney Tracy Weaver, Scott L. Buxton, 58, of Bethany, was charged with 2 counts of child pornography following an investigation by the Illinois State Police. Illinois State Police received a cyber tip related to suspicious internet activity linked to a Gmail account. Upon further investigation, they connected the Gmail account and associated IP addresses to Buxton. Within online accounts, multiple images depicting child pornography were discovered, the release said. Weaver said Buxton turned himself in at the Moultrie County Sheriff's Office around 5 p.m. Thursday. Buxton has served on the Moultrie County Board since December 2022 and was elected to serve as Marrowbone Township Supervisor in April 2025. The investigation also led to the arrest of Tyler Scott, 26, formerly of Dalton County, who authorities say engaged in communications with Buxton, which included requests for and transmission of images and videos containing child pornography. Scott is charged with 2 counts of child pornography and 1 count of grooming. He remains in custody and is scheduled for a preliminary hearing on June 30th. Due to a conflict of interest arising from Buxton serving on the Moultrie County Board, Coles County State's Attorney Jesse Danley was appointed as a special prosecutor to oversee his case. The investigation is ongoing. Armed Dad in School Confrontation, Spared Prison, by Tony Reed. Oriana. The armed and angry dad, accused by witnesses of arriving at Argenta Oriana Elementary School and threatening to shoot the student involved in a confrontation with his daughter and the student's family, has been spared incarceration. Michael E. Evans Sr. appeared Thursday in Bacon County Circuit Court and was sentenced to 2 years probation after admitting the unlawful use of a weapon. The 33-year-old defendant also was sentenced to 180 days in jail, but that was canceled out, with arrest for time served, since his arrest on December 19, 2024. He also pleaded guilty to a violation of the state's concealed carry laws and was given another 30-day sentence, also canceled out, for credit for time served. Judge Rodney Forbes said he was concerned about Evans' anger management abilities and ordered him to undergo a mental health evaluation. and complete any recommended treatment. A sworn affidavit about the case, filed by the Macon County Sheriff's Office, said Evans had been alerted by his girlfriend that their daughter had been the victim of trouble on the school bus with another student. Witnesses at the elementary school described him as arriving on campus and getting into a confrontation with staff, who refused to give him the names of the other student involved and their family. One witness said Evans referred to a video of the incident and warned, "Well, I've got the video, and I'm going to find out who did this. I will hunt them down and put a bullet in their head," according to the affidavit. Michael then lifted up his shirt and exposed a black and white pistol tucked into his pants, and continued, "You think I'm expletive kidding. I'll find them and their family." Deputies said that during questioning, Evans admitted making threats, but claimed the exposure of the gun was accidental. He rose in court to apologize for what he had done and said it was out of character. "I have a juvenile record, but since then, I've been a clean guy and never done anything wrong," he added. Evans works as a licensed vehicle repossessor for Mount Zion firm Precision Recovery and carries a gun as part of his job. His boss, Jason Henry, testified that he was a model employee and he didn't hesitate to rehire him when he was released from jail May 8th. "I think he started the same day," Kirby told the judge. But Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Kaylin Deeb said Evans deserved a 2-year prison sentence, the maximum penalty agreed as part of a plea deal negotiated with defense attorney Steve Jones. "This is a very significant incident that took place in an elementary school," she said. But Jones counter-argued that the context of what happened had to be taken into consideration. He pointed out that Evans was working the day he got the call about his daughter and was already armed as part of his job. "It's not like he got this call at home while watching TV and decided to get a weapon before he proceeded to the school," Jones explained. "He was already carrying a weapon because on his job, not because he thought he needed it to go to the school grounds. I think that is a huge distinction as to what is going on here. It's not like he made a conscious decision to harm anybody before he went to the elementary school." Pronouncing the sentence, Forbes said he took note of Evans' clean adult record and his willingness to admit guilt and apologize. The judge told him his rehabilitative potential outweighs the need to protect the public, and said he didn't feel Evans posed a danger. But, as a further part of his sentencing while on probation, the defendant is banned from school property and ordered to stay away from named individuals who were part of the case against him. Movies Under the Stars gets Wicked by Danette Beckett. Decatur. The Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater will be hosting free movie nights titled Movies Under the Stars once a month. Gates will open at 6 p.m., with the movie beginning at 7 p.m. The first film was shown this past Saturday, June 28th, which was Wicked. Future movies will include Barbie the Movie on July 26th and Remember the Titans on August 16th. This year's Movies Under the Stars will be shown at the Decatur Park District's new Video Wall. Blankets and lawn chairs are encouraged. Concessions will be open for the evening. For weather updates and more information, visit devonamphitheater.com or follow the Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater on Facebook. An anniversary. Mr. and Mrs. Thomas Tucker, 70th. Decatur. Thomas and Eileen Tucker will celebrate their 70th wedding anniversary with an open house and gathering of family and friends from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday, July 6th at Friends Creek Community Building, 101 South North Street, Argenta. Thomas Ralph Tucker and Eileen Nellie Boyd were married on July 10th, 1955, at the First Baptist Church in Decatur. Thomas is an Army veteran and a retired teacher. Eileen is a retired teacher and quilter. They are the proud parents of Sam, Jan, Tucker, Tim, David Rappaport, Tucker, Rachel Miller, Ben Tucker, and Michelle Tucker, Dean Otta. They have 11 grandchildren, 18 great-grandchildren, and 4 step-grandchildren. Blood Drive in Decatur. Decatur Memorial Hospital is hosting a blood drive with Impact Life from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday, July 1st, in Classroom C, 2300 North Edward Street, Decatur. All presenting donors get a choice of an e-gift card, donate to your favorite charity, or use bonus points in the reward store. July feature is a barbecue set. Donors must be older than 17 and weigh more than 110 pounds. Photo identification is required. To schedule an appointment or for more information, call 800-747-5401 or visit bloodcenter.org. Also from the front page, a sport for all. Forsyth Open Disc Golf Tourney draws players from 13 states plus Mexico by Valerie Wells. Decatur. Disc golf can be as casual or as competitive as players want it to be. Chaz Wilson of Sullivan began playing because his friends did, and at first it was just for fun. But as he got better at it, he started entering tournaments and winning. He's won tournaments at the MA4 level, which is beginners, and is competing at the MA3 level this weekend, the next tier higher, during the Forsyth Open, the second local tournament sponsored by Ledgestone Disc Golf. The competition was held at Fairview Park and will be at Forsyth Park. It's outdoors and it brings people together and it's fun, Wilson said. And I've got little kids who want to play. They're really good at it, too. With small children, he said, you have to start them off with the right discs. As a competitor, he has a whole stack of different discs for different situations, and some are too heavy for a child. I give my kids super light discs, he said. If you give them something like I've got in here, they can't throw it 10 feet. Disc golf is played much like regular golf, said Mike Krupicka, tour director for the Illinois Open Series. Players tee off and play rounds of holes, which are metal baskets with a tray beneath. The object is to get your disc into the tray in the fewest throws possible. Holes have pars, like golf holes. And again, as in golf, the player who has the lowest score at the end wins. The course at Fairview was set up temporarily for this tournament, and players really liked it, Krupicka said. He hopes the park will set up a permanent course eventually. Forsyth Park already has a permanent course with 18 holes. The tournament drew 132 players from 13 states and one from Mexico, ranging in age from 14 to past 70. Divisions range from amateur to professional. When you throw the disc, wherever it lands is where you throw the next one from, Krupicka said. The game started off in California, where people would put marks of tape on trees, and they tried to hit the trees, back in the 70s. Eventually, they built the baskets to catch the discs, and it evolved over the years. You have discs from putters to drivers. You'll see guys with 20 discs in their bag. You can use a regular frisbee and play for fun, he said, and it's not necessary to have all those discs collected to begin playing the sport. You get to hang out with new people and meet new friends. That's why I do it, said Tom Gravatt of Peoria, who takes it seriously enough to play competitively, but does it because he enjoys it too. Like Wilson, he started because his buddies played, and disc golf players drag people in because it's more fun when there are more players. Dalton Hodgson, also of Peoria, started playing at 13, messing around with friends at the park. I got serious about 3 years ago, he said, and this is the first year I'm actually getting into big tournaments and stuff like that. He was in first place on Sunday morning in his division, but wasn't counting on staying there. There's still a lot of golf to play, he added with a chuckle. Any age can play competitively, Krupicka said, though players 13 and younger must have a chaperone along. And one of the things Wilson says he likes most about disc golf is there's no upper age where you can't be competitive anymore. He loves sports of all kinds and being outdoors, but some sports are not possible to continue past a certain age. With disc golf, the whole family, grandparents and all, can play together. I'm 38, he said. I can't get out there and play football anymore. Week in Illinois, a recap of news across the state from the past 7 days. Raul joins anti-Trump suit. Attorney General Kwame Raul announced he has joined another multi-state lawsuit challenging the Trump administration's decision to withhold billions of dollars in federal funds that had previously been approved for states and other grantees. Steel mill. U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski and a local steelworkers union are demanding that President Trump and the Japanese firm that just bought U.S. Steel find a way to ensure some of the money from the $14 billion deal makes its way to the struggling steel mill in Granite City. Tribune. The Chicago Tribune offered a buyout to its union newsroom employees, the first since days after the newspaper was purchased by hedge fund Alden Global Capital in 2021. Sosa. Legendary Cubs slugger Sammy Sosa returned to Wrigley Field for the first time in more than 20 years on June 20th, before a Mariners game. Dog Hotel. K9 Resorts, a national pet hotel chain that bills itself as the Ritz-Carlton for dogs, opened its first Illinois location Monday in Deerfield. Baiting Ducks, a waterfowl hunting club southeast of Carbondale, was ordered by a federal judge to close for 2 years and pay fines after its owner admitted to illegally baiting ducks during hunting season. Manure protest. An anti-Donald Trump protest outside the Macoupin County Courthouse in Carlinville was undeterred despite protesters finding trucks loaded with manure parked there. Prison reform. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a new law to make a series of changes to the Prisoner Review Board after it released a man who would go on to commit murder, leading to intense scrutiny in Springfield. Bombing Iran. Both of Illinois' Democratic U.S. senators expressed dismay over President Trump's decision to bomb 3 nuclear sites in Iran, saying he should have sought congressional approval. Housing. Illinois has a shortage of about 142,000 housing units and must build 227,000 in the next 10 years to keep pace with demand, a number that would require recent annual production rates to double, according to a new economic study. With the heat wave, meteorologist Brett Borchald commented, "Some folks may look at the high temperatures and say, oh, it's only going to be in the 90s. It's not in the hundreds. It won't feel that bad. It's really the humidity where public health experts start to notice that there's more of an impact. And yes, it really will feel that bad." We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, June 30th, 2025, along with selections from the weekend edition dated June 28th and 29th. Please stay tuned.